Welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth Amos. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. In this podcast, I chat to all sorts of normal Christians, asking them just how they live their quiet lives and how they integrate their faith into their daily lives. I hope that by listening, you will be encouraged to go out and live your own quiet life to the glory of God. You can find the episode show notes, the Quiet Life blog, and other resources at ruthamos.com.au. That's ruthamos.com.au. Now let's get on with the show. Hello, welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm Ruth. It is great to have you here with me today. This is episode 46, and as I record this, it is Wednesday the 13th of November 2019, and you can probably hear from my voice that I'm feeling a lot better than I was last week. Today's guest, well, it's part two of that interview with Christina that we started last week, and today we talk about children and male and female roles and God's provision. You may not agree with everything that Christina says in her interview today, but I think you'll get a lot out of it. It's really interesting to hear her take on life. And it was really good to have some feedback on last week's interview. I got some messages from people saying things like, so Eva says that she's followed Pilgrim Hill since they first started. So she's been part of that journey, which is really cool. And yeah, Wendy says it's interesting to read what she's doing because she read the transcription. I'll talk about that a bit more in a minute. And that ministry of having all the meals with all the Christian churches involved and helping, which is really fantastic. Jeannie said she'd love to visit Tasmania again. And I'm sure everybody wants to visit Tasmania because it's a fantastic place, but she probably won't stay at the Pilgrim Hill Hostel. And Jeannie, I don't think you'll be doing the fruit picking, but yeah, it's great. So thank you for all of your input and comments. I also got a beautiful gift from one of our listeners, Sophia, who gave me some lemon and honey to help me with my cold, and I was so blessed. Oh, and garlic as well, and it worked. Look at that. So yes, yeah, so thanks for all of that feedback. That's really great. I love to get your feedback. I love to hear that people are actually listening to this podcast. It's fantastic. And remember to share it with people if you think it will help them out. I really want people to be encouraged by the stories that I share and encouraged by the variety of life that's available as a Christian, the diversity that we have in our Christian walk. And we'll talk about that a bit today. And I also talked about that on my blog this week, just the amazing variety that God's given us. I just chose flowers because there's just such an incredible variety in flowers, but it doesn't matter where you look, there's an incredible variety. And I think God doesn't expect us all to be the same either. He's created us all individuals. And while we are part of a community, and that community life is very important, it's important that you fulfill your role that God's given you to do. So anyway, enough preaching. But yes, the other thing that I wanted to say was that I got many more responses on the transcript that I put up than I did on the listening bit. And that's fine on the podcast bit. And there's always a transcript available. Sometimes it's available a couple of days late, but I always make a transcript available for you because I understand some people like to listen and some people like to read. So yeah, Marion said, from someone who struggles to make time to listen to a podcast but has already read it, and gave me a bit of a laugh. So she's one of those readers that I prefer to read than listen. The only thing with the readers, of course, is that they don't get to hear this bit. So I'm not sure really how I'm going to do that this week. Having said thank you to all of you readers, I might have to put it in the show notes or the introduction or something. But yes, you listeners, you get an extra bit of Ruth blethering on, which I hope that you enjoy. Yeah, so I am feeling much better. I am enjoying life. I have written 20,000 words in my NaNoWriMo novel, and I'm heading for 21,671 words today after I get this podcast up, and I'm having a lot of fun with it. Caleb, my son, has finished his exams and gone camping, which is fun. And yeah, we're basically enjoying life, just getting on with things. I'm looking at my calendar because honestly, when I think about the week just gone and the week ahead, I often can't remember what happened. But yes, it's just been a pretty normal week with those lemons. I made lemon and honey, and I also made lemon cordial, and I also made lemon meringue pie. So we've been enjoying the lemons that I was given so much. And that was my Saturday. My Sabbath was spent cooking and baking and enjoying that. So I hope you're having a good week. I hope that you're feeling well. And let's listen to this chat with Christina, hearing about a bit more about her life and what life is like with seven daughters. All right, so I'm going to ask a question that's probably very rude, but having seven daughters is not a very culturally acceptable. It's a countercultural.
It is, isn't it?
Space. So can you talk about that?
No, actually, it's funny. People are usually very, very polite to me, even people that probably think you should only have one or two children, because they assume that we're trying for a boy.
That's your app.
So it's funny, you know, you see them, first of all, you see somebody do a double take because they see how many children we have, we're out and about, and then you see them counting. You can see the little head nod as they're kind of counting heads.
And so then your youngest is a baby and your oldest is...
almost 11.
Right, yeah.
And then they open their mouths and then... they look again and they burst out laughing and they say they're all girls. So I'd like to think, you know, that's actually, you know, people are generally very positive because they just get taken by the fact that I've produced these seven daughters and they're like, oh my goodness. I always wanted to have a big family. I'm actually an only child. Mm. My parents were told that they would never be able to conceive a child.
Wow. And, so you're a miracle child.
You're right. And even after I was conceived, my mum went to the doctor and said, I'm pregnant. And the doctor said, no, you're not pregnant. You have cervical cancer. And I have to do a D&C immediately. Oh. Don't go home. And my mother went home. So I grew up with parents who really enjoyed children. And they would, they were very pro-children.
Yeah.
You'd be very... positive about big families. Mm. And my best friend growing up was the oldest of 10. Mm. And it looked to me from the outside like they were having an endless run of fun and games. I'm sure she would have had a different perspective had I asked her that question, but it looked like a lot of fun to me. So I grew up just really thinking, oh, well, children are a blessing from the Lord. You know, that's what I want. And at one point when I was, I think, in my early 20s, I would deliberately wear this as a bit of a defiant badge. I would say to people, I'm gonna have 10 sons. Just to be very kind of countercultural. But it was also a warning because I thought, well, I don't want to have a relationship with somebody who doesn't want to have kids.
Absolutely.
So I'll just say this and that will kind of weed out the men for the boys. So I was always told, you've really got to stop saying that. No one's going to date you. No one's going to want to have a relationship with you ever because of this thing you said.
Because nobody else in the world loves a large family.
Well, apparently. So then I actually met my future husband, and we were friends for about a year internationally. Mm-hmm. And then he came out to Tassie to do the Overland Track. It's a long story. And we were literally on the first day of the Overland Track. Went up to Marion's Lookout. It's beautiful up there. And I think he turned to me at one point. He said, so how many children would you like to have? And I thought, oh, here we go. And I told him and he started laughing. And he said, well, I grew up telling everybody I wanted to have 12. So that was a moment where we both kind of thought, this is a friendship that has some possibilities.
Yeah, for sure. You've got through the first two. Wow, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so I'm very blessed. Look, I have incredibly easy pregnancies. Mm. I don't even get nauseous, really.
Wow.
So I think that would have been way more difficult to have a large family if I'd been the kind of person that has to go to bed for nine months. Whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
So we've been very, very blessed.
And would you say that you and your husband are both extroverts?
You know, I have trouble with that. I don't really understand that whole... My husband enjoys that kind of thing, personality tests and everything. I think he made me take a personality test once and it was probably the worst evening of our marriage. Every few minutes I would say, is it over yet? Do I have to do this? You know. But anyway, my husband is a shy extrovert. Mm. So he's the kind of person that gets lots of energy from people. Mm. You know, he loves it when we have a hostel full of people. you know, we've got 7 little kids sleeping in the bedroom back here, and we've got 12 people sleeping up there, and we've got people coming over the next day. He's as happy as a pig in mud.
Yeah.
But he's also a lot more quiet than I am and tends to be a better listener, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So he's very gifted with people who he's the kind of person that, you know, he'll go to a party or a cocktail party or you know, meet and greet kind of party, and he'll find the people that no one's talking to.
Sit in the corner and have a big in-depth conversation.
Absolutely, yes, which is which that's is fantastic. A wonderful gift.
Yeah.
And so he and I are very complimentary to each other. And we actually love running hospitality ministry together. It's when we first got married, my husband was very intentional about sort of sitting down and saying, okay, these are your gifts, these are my gifts. How can we, how do you think God wants us to work together? I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah.
I think sometimes in certain areas of the church, in a reaction to feminism, we've gone in another direction that's not, also not Christian.
Mm.
And we've kind of said, oh, you know, the man is the vision caster and the woman is one size fits all. And, you know, she comes in and she's 100% on support, and it's really irrelevant what her, what her strengths and weaknesses are, because she'll just slot in, you know. And I don't think there's anything wrong with taking a supporting role at all. And, you know, I'm not dissing that. I mean, Jesus said that the least will be the greatest, and he who's the servant will be the greatest of all.
For sure.
But I do think that God created us all with specific strengths and weaknesses, specific vocations, specific passions. And so I'm really grateful that I married somebody who was really aware of that and really sat down and said, oh, well, look, you're good at this, I'm good at this. How does this, what does this fit together? And what kind of picture does that make? And I think that's really, that's a really wonderful Genesis picture.
Absolutely.
Of how Adam and Eve were created. That being a helper, it definitely means that there's a supportive role as well. But it also means that you're helping by bringing to the table things that weren't already there. that God put in you. And so it's a beautiful picture of kind of gospel partnership. Sorry, got onto a tangent there.
No, that's wonderful. So going back to the family, just because I'd like to ask these things, do you have family devotion time every day, or is it, how does your faith show itself in the family situation?
Well, we're really blessed because we both work from home, which isn't always easy. Sometimes it's like, you know, it's easy to step on each other's toes, but it's also we wouldn't have it any other way, and we love it. Because we work from home, and often we are working with travelers in the evening, so my husband actually takes some time off during the middle of the day. And so he has some time with the girls. We homeschool. And so he actually helps with, he does some of the homeschooling. I don't think of it as helping so much. It's more like he has subjects he's passionate about, and he actually loves working with the girls on those. We usually just read a bit of the Bible together at breakfast, basically. Probably. But as I said, we're a very talkative family. And so the older girls sit up with us one night a week with the travelers. And our 10-year-old has our 10-year-old is a hilariously confident evangelist, and she, I don't know how she does it, but she asks people questions that you wouldn't think you would get away with. I get, meaning, I don't know. And she comes back, you know, we'll go, it's just funny, we'll meet some friends at the park or something, and she goes and chats to some of them while I'm chatting somewhere else. She comes back and she's like, well, this is why they're not going to church anymore. And, you know, this is what happened. And, you know, this is where they are with the Lord. And, you know.
All good.
And I'm just like, wow. Okay.
Sure. Yeah, that's amazing.
But yes, she was chatting with an atheist traveler who is about to leave the next day or something. And he said something to her that she found preposterous. And she was polite about it, but she was like, you know, I wish you weren't leaving tomorrow because we really need to talk about this.
So great.
And we really do try to one of our biggest prayers constantly is for protection for the children. Mm. We've actually had quite a few conversations with people that have come out of live-in ministry as children. Mm. People who've grown up at Libri fellowships around the world. Yeah. And said, look, how do this without messing up our children. Yeah. So we are actually quite intentional about what we involve them and don't involve them in. And but I think on the whole, I think we've been through different periods in missionary history of how you deal with children. And I certainly don't want to, condemn anyone for, choices that they've made that are different. Obviously, the Holy Spirit has to deal with each person as to how, they're going to balance family and ministry and such. But we found it nothing but a blessing so far. And I love, one of my favorite authors right now is Rosaria Butterfield. Mm. She's written a wonderful book called The Gospel Comes with a House Key.
Nice.
One of her other books, because she came out of the gay and lesbian community.
Right.
In one of her other books, she talks about the fact that she, as a Christian, has had really an open door to people from that community.
Mm.
And at the same time, she's had adopted and foster children.
Mm.
And people have said, oh my goodness, how can you have people from that community in your home when you have children there? And one of the things she said was, look, my children see me sitting down with transgender people, people who are profoundly depressed, people from communities that perhaps other Christians will not be around, she said what they learn when they see me showing them unconditional love is that they're safe with me.
Yeah.
My children are safe with me. Like if they have a temptation, if they have a struggle, if they have a mental issue or a psychological sexual issue, they're not going to be afraid to tell me about it because they know I'm safe. And I think that's something that's really encouraged me.
Yeah.
Just to remember, our children have heard people ask us hard questions and they've heard us answer and we don't get stiffen up, we don't stiffen up about it. And I'm hoping that we have the same, the same result.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's wonderful. All right. So last couple of questions that I always ask, but when do you feel close to God?
Oh, okay. So I actually feel really close to God. This sounds really bad. It sounds really bad, but asking him for things and he provides.
Mm.
And that's a way, I don't know. I know how, some people love to use the five love languages in their marriage.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say that gifts was my love language necessarily, but I feel like the Lord has shown me so much mercy and kindness and grace and attention with giving me things.
Mm.
Sometimes really tiny things.
Yeah.
Like recently, it's not tiny in one sense, but I'm not talking about Cadillacs, I'm not talking about a Lamborghini. But recently I was really low, I was actually feeling quite terrible for months and I did actually have a pregnancy loss.
Mm.
And because of that, I was tested for my bloods were tested and they discovered I was very low on iron.
Mm.
And that helped to explain why I'd been feeling so low.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
It was not based on any difficulties I was having in life. It was just actually just feeling really low. So I went and got an iron infusion. But anyway, in the meantime, I was like, oh gosh, I really need some meat. And we were a bit low on money that pay period. And I was like, I don't have any more money to buy any meat right now. It's not in the budget for me to go out and buy a bunch of meat. And I was actually just praying. I was like, Lord, I'm really low on iron and I really need some meat. But it's okay. I'll make do with what I have, and I cheerily go about, trying to make a plan and everything for the rest of the week. I think it's going to be a bit of a lean week. So like literally the next day, I don't know if it was the same day or the next day, I get this text message from my neighbor that I haven't seen in 6 months or something. She lives down the road. I don't think I even knew her surname. She sends me a message and she goes, "Would you like some meat?"
That's so awesome.
Because she goes, we actually ordered a quarter of a cow and we had no idea what that was. Because they're like tree changers.
That's a lot of meat.
And they moved down here to have a better lifestyle for their kids, but they come from a city, you know.
Yeah.
So they were just like flooded with meat, you know, and I was just laughing. I was like, yep, I'd love to take the meat. Thank you.
Yeah,
but this is not somebody I've ever exchanged a cup of sugar or milk or anything with, you know. Yeah. It's completely random. And the number of times that things like that have happened to me immediately as a result of prayer, I should probably be writing them down, but it just it really happens all the time. And I think about the fact that, you know, in the Lord's Prayer, you know, we ask the Lord for our daily needs. And I know that sometimes people will say, oh, you know, don't pray for selfish things, pray for, you know, unselfish things. And I do pray for other people as well. But I think, you know, there's a passage that says, what father among you when his son asks for bread is going to give him a stone? And there's another passage, of course, where God says, you know, don't worry about what you're going to wear, because God attires the lilies of the field even better than Solomon in all his glory. And, you know, if he does that for them, what is he going to do for you? And I think just that constant, that reminder that the Lord is listening to my prayers because of Jesus, because I'm clothed in Jesus' righteousness, is wonderfully, wonderfully encouraging.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that makes his presence and the reality of the relationship so tangible. So asking God for stuff. I feel close to him.
I'm just reading John Piper's Desiring God, Christian Hedonism. And he says that, yes, when we ask God, it gives him glory.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like if you were a paraplegic, and there was somebody who was looking after you all the time, when somebody came around to visit, you would give that person glory by the way that they served you, and the other person by the way that, you know. So it's just, we can't do anything by ourselves.
That's right.
We need to ask him for everything. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And asking reminds you that you're reliant on him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the thing is, I mean, I know if I forget to ask, I know the Lord will still provide for me.
Sure.
But I do find that it's a different kind of provision. Because I think that he loves to show his faithfulness by little things like that, by the meat that comes the day after you pray for it, you know, things like that. And because it reminds us that we are that we're reliant on him. I mean, I'm reliant on him minute by minute. You know, I can't take another breath without his provision.
Yeah.
But it's something I take for granted. But when you actually come to the Lord with even really small things that are troubling you, it gives him an opportunity to show his faithfulness and your dependence in a really beautiful way.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, totally agree. So what's one thing about God or Christianity that you wish everyone knew?
I wish everyone knew that it's somehow, there's a few things probably. One of them is the fact that God created diversity. I think that diversity has become a dirty word among some Christians because it gets associated with other concepts. But really, I can't even remember. My husband always remembers the number of species that God's created.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's only the beginning. The biodiversity is just showing us in an amazingly visual way that God values diversity. And there's a wonderful passage in Revelation where it says that, you know, I think it's in Revelation, God desires that, you know, that there's going to be every tongue, every tribe, every nation is going to be coming, and the kings of the earth will be presenting their gifts. The earth will be filled with the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the ocean. people, when they come into heaven, they're not going to all look the same.
That's right.
You know, we're not going to be replaceable disembodied spirits. You know, as we come to the Lord, we bring our heritage, we bring our stories, we bring our culture, our languages, and He's made human beings to be incredibly diverse and irreplaceable and unique.
Mm.
And so when you come to Christ, it's not a flattening out. It's not a cutting off, but it's actually being born into an amazing life where you're more yourself.
Mm.
You reflect a facet of God's nature because we've been made in His image.
Mm.
We're His image bearers, and that through sanctification you become more and more the person that God designed you to be. And even looking culturally, you know, the best kind of missionaries are the incarnational ones, right? In history, the ones that take Jesus coming and divesting Himself of His rights and coming into the world and being a human man in a certain culture at a certain time, speaking the language, wearing the clothes, eating the food, singing the songs.
Mm-hmm.
They take that as a model, and you see missionaries who've from the 19th century England who go into China, instead of dressing everyone in English clothes and teaching them English hymns, they come in and they say, how can I learn from your culture? You know, let me wear the clothes that you wear. Let me speak the language you speak. Let me eat the way that you eat. And through that, you know, there's an amazing indigenous Christianity that's born, that becomes a beautiful, vibrant piece of God's story.
Yeah.
Not replicating Western Christianity everywhere, but actually, you know, discovering what does African Christianity look like? What does Chinese Christianity look like? What does Uyghur Christianity, you know, look like? What does Aboriginal Christianity look like? And, you know, God cares about that. God cares about diversity. And the only real diversity, the only true, like, absolutely soul-deep diversity you can have is when you're reconciled to Jesus and transferred into His kingdom.
Yeah, for sure. It's not a club where you have to join and fit in.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
It's a family where you are free to be.
That's right.
Fully yourself.
Yes. And as you, I'm excited. I have a very optimistic eschatology, so I'm very excited about the spread of Christianity in the global South. I think that Christians in the West can get very, very pessimistic because of the time we're living in now.
Yeah.
We also sometimes, because there are battles we do need to fight, we sometimes tend to see the dark things. And there are very dark things, abortion laws being passed that are barbaric. But there are also things happening in our culture even today that are stemming from Christianity. I mean, this is a tiny example, but recently one of my daughters she had a gift certificate to Fuller's. She went into Fuller's, she got a mermaid sticker book. She brought it home with my husband. I was looking at it and I was like, we didn't have anything like this when I was little. When I was little, if you got a mermaid sticker book, they were very sexualized.
Yes,
like the women had tiny little waists, big breasts, you know, Playboy looking personas.
Yeah.
This one, you know, it's beautiful. Like they're clothed mermaids, you know. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, and they look happy, they look athletic, they look like little girls, they look, you know, like they're going about their business and having an interesting life, you know. And I know that sounds like a tiny thing, but little things like that actually do change your perception of who you are growing up.
Yeah, for sure.
And I know, you know, when I look back through history, because my family, we're obsessed with history, we love history. That kind of dignity for women, for children, or for any vulnerable group comes directly from the gospel.
Absolutely.
So I think, you know, there's actually oftentimes we notice the things in our culture that are wrong. Mm-hmm. And as I said, it's important to notice because we need to do something and reach out to people. But there are also really good things that are happening in our culture, and we often aren't only seeing the glass half empty, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
and so as I said, I'm very excited about the fact that, you know, I mean, what is it? China has more Christians now than Australia has people.
Yeah. It's incredible.
I mean, it's certainly a very, very difficult time to be a Christian in China. It's hard. We have Chinese travelers that stay with us, and we've learned so much about what it's like to be Chinese. And but there's exciting things happening.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm very excited about what God's doing in the world.
Yeah.
And I hope that one day, you know, there'll be some people that have been impacted by traveling through here and being welcomed.
Yes.
Hopefully feeling loved and accepted and hearing something really different about the world, hearing something really different about who they are and what the possibilities of their life is.
Mm. Yeah, fantastic. Okay, I just want to say, if you're hearing a third voice, that's the dog. And he just wanted to be involved.
That's right. The dog's name is Barnabas. He's the only male apart from my husband.
So he just wanted to make sure we all were aware of
it. Yes, yes. It wasn't me just snoring in the middle of
me snoring while you're talking.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, but we're poking words. Wake up with the next question.
Not at all. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us?
Not particularly. I mean, I guess, I don't know if you do have show notes and have like a
link.
Yeah, I do
have show notes.
Yeah, okay. Because so you can look at the website and see what our hostel is like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Please invite, you know, tell people to come stay. Mm-hmm. And it is a Christian hostel. We're openly a Christian hostel, but it's fine for anyone from any background to come, and they don't have to be interested in discipleship or counseling or spiritual formation. They're welcome to just come and enjoy a safe and welcoming environment.
Yeah.
And enjoy Tasmania and enjoy having a nice, safe, warm place to come back to.
Mm. And if you are in Tasmania, look out for the Pilgrim Hill Arts Festival next winter.
Yes, it's usually, I think we're going to try to have it on at the same time as the Willie Smith's Midwinter Festival.
Oh, fantastic.
Which is in Huonville as well.
Mm.
So we used to have it at the same time as Dark Mofo, but actually another artist's exhibition has now started in Hobart that goes at the same time as Dark Mofo, which we're delighted about.
Yeah.
And so we made a decision to go on a different weekend because we want to create more opportunities for Christian artists, not less.
Yeah.
And not be in competition, but rather, you know, people can exhibit in one and then another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thank you so much for coming up. And I'm sorry I didn't warn you not to bring the mini.
It's fantastic. Mini's fine. Cool. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Ruth.
Wasn't that just great? I loved talking to Christina. It was a fantastic conversation. She said to me afterwards, I hope I made it clear that having a large family is a lot of hard work. I'm sure that we all understand that having a large family is a lot of hard work. And you'll find all the website details for Pilgrim Hill and everything in the show notes. Next week, we talk to Catherine. She's an actor and a voice actor in the United States. We talk more about creativity. She's a creative like Christina, but she's made very different life choices. I am sure you will enjoy next week's interview. I want to say a special thanks to Catherine Joy from Joy Music House for the music for today, and Matt Dobson, thank you for the transcription. And again, I just want to reiterate, I love your feedback, so get in touch with me. You can find me on Facebook at Ruth Amos Author. You can find me on Twitter at A Quiet Life. You can email me, ruth@ruthamos.com.au. And I would love to chat with you. And I will chat with you again next week.